Thank you for tuning in to the Lodestars podcast, kindly supported by Maersk Line. Your promise delivered.
Hello, my name is Gavin Van Maal and I'm the editor of the Lodestar, the supply chain and logistics industry's leading source of news and insight. And welcome to this week's podcast. Now, we've had a little dig around in the archives and come up with a fascinating conversation I recorded with Jim Whalen, president of Intra for the Asia region. For the uninitiated, Intra is the world's ocean shipping electronic marketplace, mainly via its online container booking platform, which handles around 25% of the world's ocean trade. To give you an idea of the scale, it processed 18.4 million bookings in the first 6 months of this year alone. Now, it's well known in our industry that the container has revolutionised the shipping industry and global supply chains. The preface of my book, Around the World in Freighty Ways, says, "The container has done for globalisation what Alexander Graham Bell did for the internet, made it possible." Yes, really, I'm shamelessly quoting myself and plugging my own book in one fell swoop. Anyway, we met in Singapore earlier this year, shortly after he had delivered a speech at the TOC Asia Container Supply Chain Conference, and Jim gave his thoughts on what the future holds for this most humble piece of technology.
Well, it'll be a physical container and a cyber container at the same time, perhaps, right? And I think saying the container has an IP address, we took some liberty. Obviously, there's a device attached to the container. There's a device, you know, a connected device to the container that would have the IP address. But in essence, it's one and the same. And, you know, there's just some very fundamental and longstanding pain points in the industry that... And there's technologies today, RFID, GPS, et cetera, AIS, that can provide sources of data for improved visibility. I think this was an attempt to look out a few years. And when you look at new mobile internet technologies and the nature of them that afford you to possibly extend that type of visibility, not just to reefer and some limited segments of containers, but really almost to dry containers and let the customer or the person who can gain value from that data in that supply chain decide that they want to have that type of visibility. And so when I say visibility, again, there's the big moving part of where is my container, right? And door to door, don't underestimate even a carrier's view of where is my container, right? And then there's just attributes, you know, that become important around safety, safety of the container being sealed.
Theft. I should presage that with I've been doing quite a lot of work on the reefer monitoring technology that's been developed recently, and obviously the Maersk Line suspects that sort of really go public on its full remote container monitoring system that it's developed place on this. And of course, when you look at the scale of the project, I mean, it's taken five, six years to fit. So I think it's 270,000 units globally. I mean, it took them a very long time. And I have to applaud them for their sort of tenacity to see the project through.
Right.
Clearly, this is almost tomorrow's world is here today sort of situation.
Well, you know, in 3 or 4 years out, when they say there's 20 billion connected devices, it's only 3 or 4 years out, 2020. So it's not that far out. One of the challenges is the willingness to pay, right? And then therefore the risk and the investment. And, you know, Maersk Line, and I think other carriers will go down the road, maybe for certain segments of containers to go do that. I think for it to be done on a larger scale, if you look at the origins of Intra, at a point in time when back in 2000, 2001, two,
this is when it was
first brought, you know, conceived. You had a consortium of carriers that looked to solve a problem in a cost-effective manner. So any one of them could have created their Intra, could have done their own, you know, mobile type sensoring of reefer containers. They could have done it their own, but could you do it to the scale that they wanted to achieve? So that joint investment, I think, is still very relevant to try to get it to a scale that is beyond perhaps a single carrier for a single set of customers for a single types of commodities, right? To really scale it. and therefore provide the broader benefit to the supply chain. Yeah. Right? There are solution providers out there today that look at street turn optimization, at dwell time optimization, yeah. at container repositioning optimization. And so to do that on a broad scale at a low cost, I think whether it's a platform like Inter or an approach like that where you have some people investing, yeah. right? We call it a neutral platform.
Yeah. I mean, I thought that was very interesting because that sort of idea takes the monitoring containers. It's not a shipping issue anymore, is it? I mean, it's a total container supply chain.
That's right. Issue.
Would you mind just talking through some of those ideas? I think you were talking about the benefits, because you specifically called it the Internet of Container Things.
Right, right.
You were talking about, you know, the benefits it could bring to hauliers, to terminal mm-hmm. operators, to shippers, forwarders.
Right, right. Well, if you think about a device permanently connected to the container, then it means that whoever is in possession of that container, and call it in a broad sense the customer of that container or owner of that container, can benefit from what could be derived in terms of the data, the visibility generally about that container. So you look at the different types of optimization that people are trying to achieve anywhere in that end-to-end supply chain, that type of the ability to proliferate that beyond just reefers in the example you brought up would certainly provide the data accessible for solutions that I would say are not at a loss technology-wise, but are lost data-wise, right? You know, one element of coming up with any type of solution with any type of technology is the data that feeds it. Because it's basically analytical, it's all based on analytics. So you need the data. This is sources, assumed to be relatively cost-effective sources of the data. Another point that I raised or made in the presentation was that at the closing yesterday, it was by the carriers and other people on the panel stating that, the industry is not growing. 50% of the buying decision is still price. But as freight rates drop and price becomes, let's say it's commoditized more on parity, that other 50% is really about differentiating your customer experience and holding price constant or equal, and now having to look at how do I gain market share based on differentiation of customer experience. This type of Internet of Container Things is ways in which you start to differentiate your customer service. So it's not just optimization and cost reduction. It differentiates the service, and as you differentiate the service, it's actually sources of growth, of market share and revenue then.
I mean, in my conversations with shippers and their forwarders, and I sort of think back to various, when there's been various casualties. I don't mean big casualty. I mean, the MOL comfort aside, but when, a ship has knocked into a quay wall or the Suez Canal. I mean, there's several in the past few years that have happened. And the paucity of data that's been available to the shipping, the shipping mm-hmm. line rings out. I think you've got a couple of containers on board, and actually, no, I've got about 200 containers on board, and it goes back and forth. And you think, actually, the cost of that mm-hmm. ultimately was really, really high. And if you've got this sort of equipment, presumably, over the amount of volume, that cost becomes ameliorated.
Mm-hmm. I think the business model is a key consideration. Who pays? Back to who pays. Mm-hmm. I would believe that shipping lines in the management of the containers and ownership of the containers and maintaining ownership of containers, providing a valuable service to customers like VCOs that would be based around the devices on containers, would be of tremendous value to BCOs, could be a source of differentiation, could be a source of competition against freight forwarders who they feel have commoditized them, and sources of revenue in that respect. BCOs, who certainly everyone would agree are beneficiaries of this, you would say could pay. And then there's many players in the middle. So my experience has been that there's no lack of pain points to solve. There generally isn't tremendous difficulty, and not to minimize it from an IT perspective, the ability to bring technology to bear. I think the willingness to pay in the industry is still or will continue to be a challenge, possibly in in who makes the investment, with what risk to differentiate that service, but recapture the value.
And on a technical point of view, I mean, obviously one of the easy things about fitting these devices, because you need some kind of transmitting device, mm-hmm. right? I mean, you can do that to a reefer because it's always got power running through it. Mm-hmm. Obviously, a dry container doesn't have the same. Is there not a technical sort of barrier?
Well, I can't. I mean, I'm going to admit here on the record that I am certainly not an expert, but I've read some white papers about it, and the mobile, you know, this emerged version 6, I think, mobile internet technology. The nature, I'll say, of the handshake between the device offers a much more extended battery life on it, right? It's meaning that it can run for extended periods of time before being replaced or recharged. The extent of that, I don't know, but it was called out specifically about us, you know, significant. It wasn't spoken about as much about the battery, but rather the nature of the mobile internet protocol that allowed more, you know, the types of handshakes and therefore the drain on the battery much, much less.
Yes.
Right?
Yes,
but then, say, if you try to put a GPS device on there,
And I guess also, I think at the same time, it's a protocol in terms of the language, that the protocols of the devices themselves, it's largely not a problem so much anymore, is it?
Well, I mentioned, if you know, on this panel today, standards I think are always a challenge, and master data management general standards, interoperability, they can always be challenges. But there has to be that, you know, there is the sensing device, and there's probably likely to be manufactured sensing devices. There probably will be parties that provide the chip that go in there, and I think it's those parties that. We'll be looking to say, here's how I get the data, here's how I put that in a repository. There's levels of analytics, because at that point, you either are feeding someone in-house who may want to do their analytics, or you start to provide levels of analytics that are relative to the party who is looking for that data, right? So I think those parties will play a large part in taking advantage of sensors that exist, and how do I extract that data, and what levels of analytics do I apply to that data for what market? And I think there'll be various levels of market. There'll be markets who want the raw data, and there'll be markets who will say, do these type of analytics for me, and then send it to me for my decision making.
Thank you for tuning in to the Lodestar's podcast, which was kindly supported by Maersk Line. Your promise delivered.